underlying issue that's out of my wheelhouse. It's not something for me to take care of, something for them to work out with their doctor, but it makes it a bigger struggle for them. And it makes it very difficult for them to think about the long game. So sometimes we have to, I've got maybe a half a dozen people that's like, look, let's stop focusing on losing weight. Let's stop focusing on body. Let's just get real fucking strong. And the minute they start getting strong, they stop giving a shit about what their body looks like. And then eventually their body starts to respond because they've set themselves up to do that. And they've stopped worrying so much and giving us so much stress and anxiety over my body doesn't look the way I want. Now they're like, holy shit, I'm stronger than 90% of women out there. This is actually really fucking cool. Holy shit, I've started to lose weight. So if we've got to get away from the physique industry telling everybody they need to look a certain way and people thinking they need to look that way and thinking that they're going to get that really quickly. Because if you're not getting it quickly, let's find other things we can focus on. Like, let's get faster. Let's get stronger. Let's get whatever. Let's improve our technical mastery of lifts. Those are all really good goals that are usually easier to do if transforming your body is a struggle and just understanding that eventually your body will respond, but you may have a period of time where you have to stop worrying about it so much. It's like with Allie, you know, Allie's a similar story as yours. Like, she came to me, she was 58 kilos, whatever. It took years before I convinced her to focus on getting stronger and putting weight on, then pulling the weight off. And she's sitting at 59, 60 kilos. And she looks way different than when she first came on. But, you know, people are too focused on the wrong things, or they're not focused enough on other things that should be important as well.
And it's almost like when you focus on those other things, the body's going to be a byproduct anyway, because you're focusing on pretty much the substance of what creates a good body. And as you say, a healthy body is a responsive body.
Yeah. So look, when I got into the industry, when you look at bodybuilding, you didn't just pick a show and jump in the show. You trained for 3, 4, 5 years first, then you did your first physique show. Nowadays people are like, ooh, I can do bikini, I can do wellness, I can do this. My friend did this 12-week, like, I just went to a show on the weekend and this looked like she had a lot of fun. I'm going to do one in 12 weeks. It's like, you've never actually trained before. What are you going to diet down to? Like, you don't have any muscle. People don't want to do the hard yards for years and then transform their bodies. And that's the way it should be. They're so obsessed on, I want results yesterday.
I think the best way to introduce this podcast. So welcome to 100% Real with Ruby. Today I got Luke Lehman here, and he is like the master of all masters, who completely changed my coaching game and changed me as a person and a quote unquote athlete in the way that I approach everything. And the thing that stuck with me over my journey with him, which I now put out to my own girls, is just stop focusing on the dumb shit. Because in focusing on the dumb shit, we don't actually make any ground towards our goals, because we keep sabotaging ourselves. We keep questioning everything and digging out the seed before we let it flourish. And something we were talking about off air that we think is the most important thing for many women out there to understand is that fat loss and weight loss are different. But not only that, losing fat doesn't automatically mean you change your whole physique, because you'll just look like a fettuccine strand if you don't have any muscle underneath it. You'll be flat and floppy. So with all of that, here's Luke. And I think a healthy body is a responsive body is the best way to introduce this, as that, like, this is all about building an amazing physique. And with that, the misconception of the two, of losing fat and actually changing your physique.
Yeah. Are we going?
Yeah, take it away.
Oh, you're recording. Oh, I thought you were practicing. You didn't tell me. I'm not used to Skype. This is cool. Usually Zoom tells me recording. Yeah. Okay. So let's go to, yeah. So we wanted to tackle, like, what's the difference, right? And what's the misconception of these things? So Now, just keep in mind, for anyone who doesn't know who I am, I've been in the industry pretty much my entire life. So I've been a coach for decades through powerlifting, bodybuilding, physique transformation, health transformations, everything. One of the, and I was on a mentorship call with a good friend of mine the other day, and she's primarily a high performance nutrition coach, and she does a little training on the side. She's getting more into that, but she trains coaches a lot of UFC fighters, does their weight cuts and a lot of professional fighters. And we were talking about how much the industry, they confuse people. They confuse the general population, and they confuse a lot of new coaches coming in from a perspective of, you know, evidence-based versus not evidence-based, you know, fat loss versus like a physique transformation. People need to understand those are two completely different things. Like when you look at most of the literature surrounding fat loss or weight loss, it's basically just, we're just going to lose weight, we're just going to lose fat. It has nothing to do with making your body look radically different. So some of the strategies that you would learn through research are not strategies, they're not, in my experience, they're not going to be the fastest way to get there. There are a lot better ways and better strategies to transform physique over time. Because most people are focused on losing a lot of weight right now. What they should be focused on is not what am I going to weigh in 3 months? What am I going to look like in 3 months? They need to figure out what I want to look like in 3 years. And social media screws a lot of this up because you see these people doing these 12-week challenges, 12-week transformations, but there's no context on where they were before, how much experience they have. And you get people who they're desperate to lose weight. They're desperate to change the way their body looks, and they're getting the wrong idea about like how long this takes. This is a long game process, right? So like we were talking off air, when you look at like just losing weight, cool. Stay active, you know, get a good, you know, 8,000 steps in a day, maybe get your cardio in, lift weights 3 days a week, and, you know, basically control starvation. That's how you lose weight. But when you look at a physique transformation, it's a lot more complicated than that, especially if you want a radical transformation. No one comes to me to lose weight or lose body fat. They come to me because they want to do that, but they want to look radically different, and they want to increase strength, increase performance, and increase a lot of other variables that have nothing to do with just the simple weight loss or fat loss process. So it takes a lot more thinking and a lot more programming, a lot more in-depth, complicated programming than just what you would see with a normal trainer at, say, Gold's Gym. And I think that's important for people to understand. If you want to change your physique, anabolic processes are really slow. This is why people do steroids. You know, if you look at how much muscle will the common man make, actual dry muscle weight, not just weight on the scale, but dry muscular weight per week in the first year, you're lucky to get 6 kilograms of actual muscle in the first year. And that's the first year. And every year after that, it slows down. And that's if you're not over dieting all the time. And that's if you're training, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. So anabolic processes in growing something underneath that fat takes a long time. Catabolic processes work really quickly, but the problem is, if you haven't done that period of building up some muscle, you know, bone doesn't have a lot of shape to it. So if you don't have muscle underneath that layer of fat, when you lose that layer of fat, you're not going to be happy with the way you look. So I think, especially for a lot of women, you know, women's rates of muscle gain are much, much smaller. And in a lot of cases, there's a mental block there about putting weight on in order to get lean. So a lot of women don't want to see the scale go up to then see it go down later. But sometimes that's exactly what it takes, especially if you want a nice finished product. So there's a lot you can unpack in this type of thing. And I think that it's with social media and with the market being super saturated with people who don't actually know what they're talking about, they just repeat what other people say, we're creating a lot of confusion on how this process works and how fast it can be done and what needs to be done. Does that make sense?
Something you said there that is powerful for a lot of people to understand is that fat loss is the catabolic process that Luke is talking about. And it does actually happen pretty quickly in comparison to muscle gain. Like, you can realistically, given that you take the right approach, which we will talk more about how the non-diet is the most important to set you up for a successful fat loss phase. But put that aside, if you do that right and you're set up for a fat loss phase, you can lose up to half a kilo. Well, you can even lose a kilo a week, but it's best to lose half a kilo a week. Like, that is something you can do, but you can't gain a kilo of muscle a week. And if you see the scale go up a half kilo when you start eating more, that's not even all muscle mass, because lean body mass includes more than just that. And I think a misconception a lot of people also have is that it's this big, complicated process, but it's actually easy and simple. It's behaviors and humans that aren't. So maybe you can talk about that a little more.
Yeah, look, you have, in one hand, you've got complex things. In the other hand, you've got simple things. The complex things are for the coach to figure out. That's why people go to a coach, at least a coach who actually knows what they're doing. You have an understanding of how biology works, how the biochemistry works, how exercise metabolism works, how to match that with training protocols as well. Because you have to be able, if you don't know how nutrition and exercise fits and what's happening at that biologic level, you can't make predictive models on what's happening. And you've seen me do this a million times. Everything is biology and math, right? So if I understand the biology and I understand the math, I can pretty much calculate where you should be in a given period of time if you just do everything I say. And I'm always within 5% of that number. And there's a lot of calculations for this, and there's a lot of research behind it. The problem is people want it to be faster than what their biology will allow. And so they get discouraged, or they want to start overcomplicating, or they get input from other places other than their coach, and then they self-sabotage. So from the application level, the stuff is very easy, right? So it's, you've got to weigh how much time do you have to train, how much literacy do you have with training, nutrition, and lifestyle. And sometimes there's a painful period of a few months of getting Gen Pop people to understand how this stuff works. And there's a period of acceptance of, okay, if I'm going to do this, I have to commit, because no one's going to get a radical physique transformation without committing. Everything in life costs something. So if I have somebody that comes in and says, look, I want to make my body look like this. Okay. This is my ideal thing. I don't care how long it takes. I just want to get there. Cool. We can do this long game plan. We can slowly integrate this over time. But if somebody comes to me and says, I want to do this and I want to do it in like 3 months, it's like, okay, we could do it. What are you willing to sacrifice? Most people aren't willing to sacrifice what they need to sacrifice in order to get there. So we have to take a more realistic approach to things. But at the base level, the same thing that normal person would do to transform their body is the same thing that elite level bodybuilders do. It's all the same shit. It's who's willing to sacrifice things and who's willing to tick all the boxes every single day. But it is a very simple process. It's the science, underlying science, is not simple. But if we have like a funnel and we throw all of this science in, that's for the coach. What comes out the bottom of the funnel is just, what are the boxes I need to tick every day to make this happen? So, and that's the easy part. That's the easy part. So, you know, monitoring your input, how much energy is coming in, monitoring your output, how much is going out, not missing workouts, being realistic on how many workouts you can hit a week, and how many Gen Pop people come to you and they say, I'm willing to do anything. You go, I'll go to the gym 5 days a week. I'll do cardio every day. I'll weigh and measure everything. And then they go 3 days a week. So they miss two sessions a week. Well, everything that I've calculated with the nutrition and everything else is based on what you're doing and not doing. So if you don't go to the gym, you're now, I've got 300 calories that you're not knocking off a week. And I've got anabolic processes that aren't happening because you didn't go to the gym. So now I have to reorganize the mathematics of the diet, because now you're eating more than I planned on. So, you know, if someone's really honest about what they can do, then you can line up all the numbers really well. And then the assessing is really precise. And that's what you need. You need precision. So if you aren't taking the boxes, we have no precision. We can't measure anything. It's like taking, if I wanted to measure 3 meters, but then I have a yardstick that's not 3 meters long, I can't measure 3 meters because the yardstick isn't big enough. So you have to look at the numbers, and they have to match up with what you're actually doing. Now, my dog just walked, Daisy just walked in. I think we talked at program design, we had talked about this where, you know, you have people who they've seen other people in the industry thinking they need to eat 30,000 calories a day and get lean. That's not how this works. Like if you're training for Tour de France, yeah, cool. You eat 3,000 calories. Most people aren't active enough to need high levels of calories. We're now told that you shouldn't diet on 1200 calories. Well, what if that's the amount of calories that makes you lose weight? Like there's a lot of blanket statements in the industry that just simply aren't true. You know, you have people that have people who will be resistant to losing weight. Some people have to diet harder than others. Some people have, I've got women who have Hashimoto's. They have to diet harder. I've got women who have to eat 1100 calories. They're, you know, 80, 90 kilos. They have to eat 1100 calories to lose weight. They eat 1400 to gain weight. And so there's a lot of things that go on with that, that, you know, there's a lot of misconception and confusion in the industry.
I love that because you reminded me of something I said way back, which will introduce our next topic. But in what you just said, I love how you put things into place and predict how things will pan out. But the thing is, it is predictable if you're not up and down all the time, if you're not questioning everything you do, if you're actually giving the level of commitment and effort that we established at the get-go. But if you're trying to shortcut the process, you make it harder for yourself. And a saying that you put up that I screenshotted is you need to match your expectations to your level of commitment. And it's not that it's bad if you keep going through these periods of up and down, because maybe there's a lot of limiting beliefs and trauma in quotation marks that you're trying to work through, which is something that I find with a lot of my girls. It's normal and it's okay. Working through that is how you actually make your results permanent. But you also need to stop trying to shortcut your way there. You need to stop questioning how long it's taking. This is what's going to make it stick, but don't expect 7-year results in a 1-month time frame. So leading into the next topic,
yeah,
is this whole like 1100, 1200 calorie thing. And we were talking before about how a calorie deficit on paper doesn't mean it's a calorie deficit in your body. And I think also bringing in that trauma element, because you're really good on bringing that into how that can kind of skew our results and how some people may need to go lower than normal calories.
Yeah, 100%. And the thing is, like, we use monitoring of calories in order to keep some type of level of accuracy, but it's not 100% accurate. So there's a lot of things you have to look at where, like, I'll give you an example. So former client of mine's eating 1500 calories a day. I've done a DEXA. We look at it, pictures, Navy body fat test. I have a pretty good idea of her body fat percentage and her fat free mass percentage. So cool. We can do a BMR for this. Let's use Catch-McArdle. We can get a fairly close idea of what her BMR is. And then I can look at, you know, adding 20% for NEAT and thermic effect, and then adding in a little bit for her exercise activity, and then cool, we can take a deficit. So 1500 calories is the deficit. She weighs what, 125 pounds or so? So you're talking about someone who, you know, weighs 56 kilos, right? 56 kilos with under 40 kilos of fat-free mass. You calculate that out, you know, BMR is not that high and the TDEE is not that high. If this person wants to lose weight, well, we're going to have to diet. You know, it's just the unfortunate part of not having a lot of muscle mass and being a really small woman and not having a lot of exercise, like a lot of high output exercise. That person's going to have to eat a little bit less. So we're going to have to knock off a little bit more calories than they want. So let's say, you know, TDEE sitting at about 1800, put on about 1500 calories. Now, here's the problem with women and being precise and being consistent and having patience. That a level of deficit is not a huge deficit, right? So you might, yeah, that's going to equal maybe 280 grams of fat loss a week, right? Now, if you have a low number like that, there's not a lot of wiggle room for making mistakes on your tracking. There's also not a lot of wiggle room on mistakes you may be making that you don't know you're making. It's like what one of the things I showed this to you guys on in program design on the whiteboard when you guys were up here in Brizzy. We looked here and said, okay, this person's in, say, let's say they're in a 15% deficit because they don't want to diet that hard. Okay, cool, we'll do a 50% deficit. If they're eating food that's out of boxes, now we've got to compete with labeling laws. Labeling laws, depending on your country, most of them say you can have a 20% swing in how many calories are in there, and that's totally legal. So if you're in a 15% deficit and you're eating out of boxes and eating frozen meals and things like that, not making your own food, you could be in a 15% deficit, but then be overeating your calories and you're tracking by 20% and not even realize it. So now you're no longer actually in a deficit. You think you're eating 1,500 calories. You're actually eating like 1,900, 2,000 calories. And so you go, I can't lose weight. I can't lose weight. I'm eating 1,500 calories. I can't lose weight. No, you're not. You're eating like 2,000 calories. That's where you're not losing weight. You need to eat more whole foods that you prepare yourself. Then the other day, I'm looking through Chronometer, which is what you and I use to track food. I mean, that's what, I don't know if you use Chronometer anymore, but that's what I use with you. But I'm looking through and people make mistakes on their entries. So I'm going through and I'm seeing like Chardonnay. So client had a glass of wine. Cool. I'm looking at it and like, you had 1 ounce of Chardonnay. No one has 1 ounce of Chardonnay. So apparently that entry, instead of putting one glass or like 250 mils, one floral ounce, which is about a shot of wine. That's a difference of like, you're missing like 100, 200 calories right there. So a lot of cases, they make mistakes in the tracking and they think they're eating a lot less than they are, because the numbers don't always add up to what you're actually taking in. Most food is highly variable in the amount of calories it has. Even an orange from the same tree might have completely different calories. It could be off 30, 40, 50, but you have a better chance of that being more accurate than if you're eating a lot of stuff that you're taking out of boxes because of those labeling laws. So at the end of the day, if you are eating a set level of calories and you're not losing weight, you're not eating what's on that paper, and you just need to accept that. So you have to make your adjustments. Do I need to do a little bit more exercise? Do I need to eat a little bit less? Or do I need to do a little bit of both? Or do I need to make some switches of maybe stop eating stuff out of boxes and prepare everything myself, so you have a higher level of accuracy? Because then at least it's precise. At least everything is precise and you have a good baseline position of what needs to happen. But it's usually with women, that's the biggest thing, because women's total daily energy expenditures are much lower than men's. And then you start throwing in, I don't want to get into a big talk like with hormones, but I see a lot of women with subclinical hypothyroid issues, and a lot of doctors say that none of that matters. It does absolutely matter. The amount of anemia that I see on labs, if you're anemic, your thyroid does not work well. If you have nutritional deficiencies, it's not going to work well. That doesn't mean you can't lose weight. What that means is it may be a bigger struggle for you than other people until your doctor gets that stuff settled out. I deal with a lot of women with Hashimoto's. Again, I'm not a doctor. That's not my thing to tell them what to do. But I work alongside doctors with this to figure out, I'm the type of coach that if you're seeing a doctor for something, and I'm familiar with that pathology, whatever you have, I'm more apt to call the doctor or give the client questions and things to ask the doctor. Because in a lot of cases, client might be on the wrong medication. The medication might not be working for them. There might be other things they need to take. There might be vitamins and minerals they need to take to make that work better, like making sure that your iron is high enough, making sure that your B12 is high enough. There's a lot more to it when you look at fat loss resistance like that. But, you look at things like Hashimoto's, you've got women can have a 15 to 40% difference in their TEE. So if you have someone who's 18, you've calculated this out as 1800, that could, their their actual TDEE could be 1500. It could be 1100. And that could be highly variable depending on if their medication is working correctly, depends on how they're utilizing iron and some of their micronutrients. So for a lot of those cases, they might actually have to eat a lot less and be a lot more active than other people that don't have any issues. That's it. That's what our job is. When you're at the level you and I are at, it's really difficult because you're trying to do the right things. You know what's going to help them, but in a lot of cases, they don't want to listen or it's too hard. So that's if I have issues like that, what I do is I just reevaluate the priorities and I go, look, we've been months and months and months. You've barely lost weight. It's swinging back and forth. Why don't we put our focus on something else where you can actually see positive momentum? Because if you're constantly focused on weight loss and the scale goes down 2 kilos and it jumps up 2.2 kilos and then it goes down 2 kilos and it comes up 1.5, that's going to be mentally draining on someone. So at that point, why don't we pick other goals? Like, let's just get real fucking strong. Let's pick a conditioning goal. Let's pick a strength goal. Let's focus on something else that's going to give you faster results. And the body will change over time if you just stop worrying about it and focus on other things. You never have a problem getting somebody brutally strong. You never have a problem getting somebody's endurance up. You never have a problem getting somebody's health up. But sometimes you do have a problem with managing people's physiques. So I think as an industry, we should get off the hyper-focused, everybody needs abs thing and start focusing on other things that they may actually be able to achieve faster that promotes positive motivation and a positive mindset on it. And just understand that form usually follows function. So if my function is to get stronger, my muscles are going to grow. If my desire is to get faster and get more endurance, my body's going to change, right? So just, if you're stuck and you feel like you're spinning your wheels, then pick other goals to do and just accept that this is going to be a longer process. Maybe I don't focus on half a kilo to a kilo of weight loss a week. Maybe I just focus on losing 100 grams a week and be happy with that. And also making sure you're measuring other things like actual body composition, not weight loss.
And this is exactly why there's this big misconception of weight loss and radically doing epic things with your body. And also on the note with the food discrepancies is how different is your food day to day and week to week? Because then it's not just inaccurate, it's constantly inaccurate. And then there's also the restaurant foods. And I was reading a study where restaurant foods can be between minus 38 to over like almost double the calories stated on the label, almost double the calories. Yeah.
Here's the thing, when you go out to eat and it's really delicious, there's a reason it's delicious. I've trained a lot of professional chefs and I'm like, how do you make food? Like, how does a professional chef make food that good? They're like, you need sugar, salt, and fat. I'm like, cool. So they just put a lot of sugar, salt, and fat in it and things will taste good. And I'm like, okay, cool. So we've got, all right, tons of sugar. That's just going to be, I love sugar. I love lollies, but when you're having tons of it, those calories add up really quick. You add in a bunch of fat. Hey, how much fat are you doing? It's like, okay, if I'm cooking, I'm saying, okay, I'm going to weigh out like 1 tablespoon of oil, put in the pot. You go to a restaurant, they're like 1 tablespoon of oil and they just pour it all in there. And it's like, you have no control over what's going in your mouth. So, go back to bodybuilding. If you want to see the people who are masters at changing their bodies, it's bodybuilders. And you have this whole anti-dieting culture that's like, oh, anti-dieting diets don't work. They do work. If you do them long enough, they're consistent and you don't do anything stupid and you train. But the thing is, like, people make fun of bodybuilders and go, oh, chicken, rice, and broccoli. I've never not seen someone lose weight if they ate chicken, rice, and broccoli for every meal, because it's inherently almost impossible to overeat that. If I want to change my body, I'm going to eat the same shit every day. So I find what I like and I eat that same thing every day. So meal prep is easy. everything's consistent. I'm eating the same amount of the same foods every single day. And guess what? You lose weight. People are like, oh, I can't lose weight no matter how little calories I eat. Okay, do a 3-day fast. Don't eat anything at all. Just water and vitamins and see if you lose weight. And they're like, oh my God, I lost all this weight. Okay, you can lose. You may just have to eat less than you want to eat. So we need to create a strategy that allows you to, you know, be able to enjoy your food when you do eat, but also be goal specific. At some point, if you really want to create a gnarly physique, you have to start thinking of foods just as fuel. And people go, oh, that's so dysfunctional, blah, blah. But it's not, because it's a goal specific thing and it's a temporary thing. You understand this isn't a forever thing. So if somebody needs to eat chicken, rice, and broccoli to change their physique, if they understand that this is not a forever thing, but this is a fundamental foundational part of my diet, that when I start eating more food to come out of my diet, maybe I do still have chicken, broccoli, rice, but maybe I have a little bit more of that, or maybe I throw in a little bit of this, maybe I throw in some bread. But people tend to treat these days like every meal has to be a fucking celebration. And that's where people are fucking up. They don't want to eat just to sustain their bodies and just to fuel their day. They want to eat like it's a fucking birthday for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then they wonder why they can't lose weight. But, you know, if you have a high goal specific thing, you have to do high goal specific stuff, especially if you want like a radical physique transformation. You know, you look at like the evidence-based crowd saying like you can have, you know, you can, it doesn't matter what you eat as long as you match your calories and macros. Okay, if you just want to lose weight, sure. But if you want to put a health focus on it, if you want to put sustainable energy component on, if you want to speed this up really quickly, I never tell people to do that. Like, I like, you know, if it fits your macros, I like flexible dieting, but the reason a lot of people can't lose weight is because they're way too flexible. So if you could eat like a very rigid plan and then add those treats in, get some momentum, and then learn how to modulate more treats, because part of the problem is those treats for a lot of people will stimulate binging. It's usually not the fact that they're dieting. It's once they have something that's off diet, they can't control themselves. So if you're like you have these amazing recipes that you give all your clients. So, and I love that stuff after I've had a small period of them understanding like how to actually control and regulate their appetite, because a lot of these people.
This is something I want you to dive into more, because a thing that I find even more prevalent in today's, because of freaking social media and everyone out there trying to say, oh, you can have alcohol every weekend, you can eat like this every weekend and still get the body of your dreams. Well, it's like a lot of people cannot control that. And if you've been over dieting your whole life, you can't control that. And then there's a dopamine reward, and people have different ways of processing. Like for me, I can't moderate. My dopamine doesn't let me moderate. I'm an abstainer. There are people that don't appreciate that part of them, because then there's other people saying, oh, you should intuitively eat. Oh, you should include it in your house. And it's like, for some people, that's not like, you need to, what you have to do now isn't what you need to do forever. And this is why a diet isn't a lifestyle. It's the smallest part of it. And why dieting isn't the most important thing to be with a coach for, because you get really good at dieting. And the saying I've got a few, which is amazing, is that we don't have a fat loss problem. We have a weight maintenance problem.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, losing weight is really easy. Losing body fat is easy. And actually transforming your body, like you said earlier, it's actually very simple and it's easy. It's easy on paper. The concept is easy. The application sometimes sucks. But it depends on like, do you want it bad enough or not? Or what are you willing to give up? What are you willing to sacrifice? There's a currency involved. If I want to, I've got to trade something to get my body to where it wants to be. What are you willing to give up? Are you willing to give up 3 days, 4 days, 5 days to go train? Are you willing to give up 15, 20, 30 minutes to your conditioning? Are you willing to give up, you know, 4 slices of bread for 1 slice of bread? It's, you know, it's that type of thing. But it's not that people need to be that stringent, but if you want, you've got a, you know, I love my continuums. It's like, I've got fat loss over here. Okay. That can be a lot of intuitive eating, flexible dieting, whatever. And I've got body composition transformation over here. And that's a completely different animal. And I'm the same way. Like I have to be very stringent on my diet, and I find a lot of my clients do, because I train a lot of coaches, and coaches tend to be really extreme people. They're either fully on or fully off. And I find a lot of gym pop people are that way as well, is if you can just avoid trigger foods for a long time and start seeing some results, then those trigger foods have less of an impact on your mentality. And then you can start slowly adding those things back in. So, because intuitive eating and lack of understanding how food works is what's getting us in this problem in the first place. That's part of this issue. It's like people don't understand how much energy is in food. People don't realize how little calories they actually burn unless you're doing like endurance training. When you lift weights, you don't burn that much. When you go for an hour long run, you burn a lot. That means that the more activity you get, the time output, the more food you can leverage. So there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of nuance in this stuff. And I think if a lot of people that think they can't lose weight, if they would knuckle down and they would make a menu or work with your coach to make a menu of something, this is a meal structure I could live with for 3 months, nail that, eat the same shit every day, watch how quickly your body transforms. Like, and this is what I've noticed with all my clients over the decades. I go on a chronometer, and the people that have the best results eat the same food every single day. It doesn't mean they're eating chicken, rice, and broccoli. Like one of my guys, Warren, I've trained Warren for a couple of years. We've had these, went from 104 down to 84. We brought him back up to 98, brought him back down. Every time we've gone up and down, he's changed. But we created a menu that he loves. He eats a serving of steak every day. He eats a lot of chicken every day. He eats a lot of broccoli and veggies and all this. When you look at his actual diet, most people would look at that and go, I could actually live with that every single day. But people need to use more variety, but they need to understand that variety, there's boundaries. There's always boundaries around this stuff. Like if you're thinking you're going to eat, you know, two Snicker bars every day and get the body of your dreams, well, that's energy that could be better utilized if you ate unprocessed whole foods. It would also keep you more satiated, and it would also drive performance and drive better quality of physique and better quality of health. But you know, you look at these different levels of competence. You know, the highest level, the best level where you have intuitive eating is unconscious competence. Unconscious competence takes, it's just like anything. It's just building up a 200 kilo bench press. If you're a man, you go to the gym, you've got a 75 kilo bench press, you want a 200 kilo bench press, that's going to take a real fucking long time. Well, nutritional literacy and understanding how food works and creating those patterns, that takes a long fucking time. So if you are at the bottom where you have unconscious incompetence, you just really don't know how food works. You don't understand how to weigh and measure or eyeball food. You don't know how to manage your hunger cues. You're prone to going into the pantry and binging every night. You have a very low level of nutritional literacy, and you have a very low level of competence. So the goal is to take you from that, you know, I don't know what I don't know, this is why I'm screwing up. I have to get you to the point where it's like, okay, I still screw up, I'm still incompetent, but I'm now understanding why I'm doing that. Then you have to get them to a level that where they're conscious and they're competent. So they're like, I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm ticking all the boxes. And then eventually you get to the point where they can just eat. They can just free eat instinctually because they understand when to stop eating. They understand what they're supposed to be eating. They understand what they need to limit eating because these are my trigger foods or whatever. But people need to understand there's a process to get there. And some people can go straight from unconscious incompetence and go straight into being consciously competent, which means like if I have a guy that comes in, he's like, I'll eat a meal plan. I'll eat the same shit every day, whatever. You can take him from that unconscious incompetence to conscious competence really fast. And then you can move them into unconscious competence really fast as well. But if you have somebody that comes in and goes, I want flexible dieting, I want to eat all kinds of different shit, I want to make sure I want a treat every day, it's my birthday every day, it's like your process is going to be a lot slower and your results are going to be a lot slower because the first person will do what needs to happen to get the results quickly. And you want to, the people who want the treats all the time, are basically telling me I'm caving to impulse hedonistic desires. I won't put away hedonistic desires long enough to get to my goal.
There's so many things I want to say on that. The first thing is, one of the last thing you said, it reminds me of something I heard Jordan Syed talk about. And it was, he had a client who wanted to be a flexible dieter and still get results. And she wanted to have 10 wines a week. And she kept complaining about why she was not getting results, like a month later and then a few more weeks later. And he's like, how about this? We can go back to the flexible dieting that you want, but why don't we do a 30-day challenge? And if you say no to that, then you don't have a problem with dieting. You have a problem with alcohol, and that needs to be looked into. So then when she gave it up for the 30 days, she saw the best results ever. And then she decided that she didn't really want to drink anymore, just the odd glass here and there. So sometimes we need to have a come to Jesus talk. That would actually be a really good thing to talk on as well. But also, something else you said is how sometimes you need to front load a lot of things that may not be what we really want to do in the short run, but in the long term, we won't have to keep doing it forever. But then also, when you commit to a diet, you have that one goal, not a million goals, just that one. So you can get in and get out, and we learn how to maintain it. And the same thing goes, like, this is why it is so important to have a coach, because the hardest thing for us as coaches is it's almost like we can predict the results, but then again, it's easy on paper, but then we have the behavioral aspects. We have the human. Just like you said with Warren, he was able to stick to the meal plan, whatever, and you were able to get him from one level straight up to the top. But when you're dealing with humans, with children that want to be able to have some enjoyment in their lives, you need to embrace the fact that this is going to be a longer process and it's going to be an investment of time. But social media is warping that up. So I feel like this can also feed into the umbrella topic of number one, the misconception of fat loss and changing your physique, and social media just gets that wrong.
It's like you if you look at like people in the industry would know, like, SMART goals, right? You want it to be specific, measurable, you want it to be attainable, realistic, time-oriented. And then you've heard me talk about this before, I added an S to the end. It needs to be sustainable. So when people look at, to me, a diet, it's people create such a negative word about it, but really a diet to me is like, that's just what you eat. That's what you eat. It's, if you're eating at maintenance, you're dieting. If you've got a fundamental setup like protein, veg, and then adding starch and fruit based on demand, how active am I, how I'm not active am I, right? When you go into a diet, let's say fat loss diet or body recomp diet, you need to understand that when you come out of this, that food that got you where you want to be is the same food you continue to eat, but now we can add in a little bit extra stuff, right? We can add in some treats because we are not treating every single meal and every single day as some type of celebration. But it's what I like about, like, even precision nutrition stuff. The stuff they teach on the coaching is really good. And I use a lot of that stuff. But there needs to be a lot more education around, like, do's and don'ts and where people may be screwing themselves up, especially if you look at people with kids. The biggest thing I see with people with kids is the booze. Like, people don't understand how much energy is in food. If you have a glass of wine, a normal glass of wine is four floral ounces or 125 milliliters. I don't know anybody who drinks a normal glass of wine. They drink a 250 or they free pour and do more. That's easily 250 to 300 and something calories. Now, how many people do you think just drink one of those? No, it's like, the people go, I had one wine on Saturday, one wine on Friday. Okay, how big was the glass? I just cut the bottom off the bottle and drank it. Okay, so you had 750 mils. You just drank like 1,500 calories of wine over the weekend. And they're like, oh my God, is it that much calories in wine? Yeah, there's that much calories in booze. And they don't understand. And then, so you have to create strategies. Okay, we need to figure out a different way to make you calm down and relax that doesn't surround you drinking all these calories. But also, like, with parents, it's eating food off their kids' plates that their kids don't eat. So they make their kids some chicken nuggets. The kid leaves a chicken nugget there. One chicken nugget won't hurt. And then it's like one chicken nugget with every meal. 7 days a week, and all of a sudden they've added in another 400, 500, 600, 700 calories just by snacking on things that they didn't think about and they didn't log it. So we see that a lot as well. But a lot of it goes back to that being accurate and being precise with what you're doing and being consistent with doing, ticking off the same boxes every single day. And the big thing that people don't want to talk about is commitment. If you want to do this, commit. I train a lot of coaches, and I have the same problems with these high level coaches that other coaches have with just normal, like your next door neighbor. They're up and down with the way that they eat. They're up and down with the way that they train. They're up and down with their consistency and their precision. So you might have like 4 or 5 weeks where they knock off six, seven kilos. And then all of a sudden they jump up 3 or 4 kilos. Oh, I drank 3 times this week and I haven't been sleeping. I'm like, okay, now we got to drop those kilos again and keep moving towards your goals. So I want people to understand it's your coach has the same issues you have. Your coaches have the same dramas that you have the same impulse desires. We want to eat that shit too. But if we've got goals, we try to avoid that shit because we've got goals. If you have goals, put the goals down on paper, focus on committing and moving towards that goal and being realistic with what you're willing to do and willing not to do to get there. And then for God's sake, if you've got some type of issue with binge eating, if you got some type of thing, night eating syndrome, I see a lot of that where people will, you know, they're working too late and they don't go to bed and they get night eating syndrome where they start binging on a bunch of sugar and fat at the end of the night. Nobody ever does night eating syndrome with steak and broccoli. They night eating syndrome, they're eating chips and lollies. For one thing, go to bed early. You know what? If you go to bed early, you won't be hungry. The second thing is don't keep shit in your house if it's a trigger food. Like last night, I'm not ashamed to say this, but it is what it is. I was up a little bit late. I was playing chess on chess.com. I was doing really well. I was about to get ready for bed. I started to go to sleep, got hungry, went into the pantry, and I ate almost a cup of walnuts. Like, and a lot of your clients would be like, well, that's a better choice than just eating a couple of lollies. But that was I had 800 calories of walnuts before I went to bed because I was hungry. See, if I had gone to bed early, that wouldn't have happened. But because I stayed up, I got crappy sleep and I ate all those and I ate almost 1,000 calories of food I didn't need that day.
And the funny thing is that the handful of lollies would have been lower calorie than the walnuts because fat versus carbs, which is where a lot of people go wrong with the misconceptions with like the calorie content of food.
I've spent 1 year working in an office building and I said, never again, I'll never work in an office building. It was the most toxic, insane culture I've ever seen. A lot of the women, they're really overweight. You know, they're sitting at a desk all day. There's people bringing in foods, they're snacking all day. Everybody's expected to eat. You know, you're the weirdo if you're the health nut and you don't eat that stuff. But a lot of the women, they got on this kick where it's like, you know, and back in the day, I remember when I'd go to visit my mom at her office, she'd have a little jar and they'd have little hard candies. Those hard candies have like maybe 10 calories a piece, right? But because they're sugar, they're demonized. So all the women in the office got rid of those lolly things and they poured a bag of mixed nuts in there, not understanding that a serving of mixed nuts is about 30 grams. And that's a good 200 calories. So they go, I'm going to have a pinch. And so they end up eating like a half a bag of mixed nuts every day. And they don't understand. Like, I don't understand why I can't lose weight. I'm working out and I'm watching what I eat. Well, you're eating like 1,000 calories, 1,500 calories in walnuts every day. And while, yeah, walnuts are good for you, they're really energy dense. So they're not really that conducive for weight loss if you're eating, you know, more than a few.
Yeah. And the other part of that is when it comes to the whole healthy versus unhealthy debate, it's like, what are you basing that on? Because it's actually going into this conversation, the fat and the carbs, people say that fats are more satiating than carbs, but it's just like, you don't just eat macros, you eat food. And okay, carbs as lollies is not satiating, but then get a baked potato or a boiled potato And that is a lot more satiating than any fat can give you. Peanut butter, that is the least satiating thing in the world because it's loaded with salt. And then if you get the ones with the sugar as well, good luck stopping at one.
Yeah. And no one ever puts their peanut butter on the scale. You know, they get a heaping tablespoon instead of tablespoon, and they end up eating it two or three times the calories that they thought they were. But if you look at how satiating different macros are, you know, you've got isolated studies for this, and the keto people will say that the high fat does it. The high protein people will say the high protein does it. But macros will be satiating for different reasons. So if we let's look at sugar. Okay. When you eat carbs, that is sugar. It doesn't matter if it's a complex carb, it doesn't matter if it's a potato or rice or lolly. It's all broken down. If you're breaking it down correctly, it's all broken down the same thing in the gut, because what you're going to absorb is fructose, glucose, galactose. So it doesn't matter if it's a long chain carbohydrate. If you overeat it, it's still going to have the same effect. So, but, you know, having more complex carbs obviously gives you more sustainable energy, and it regulates how you modulate insulin. And insulin, if your metabolism, if your physiology is working right, insulin is a massively powerful anorectic hormone, meaning that it does help with your appetite, because insulin in a normal functioning body creates a release of leptin from your fat cells, and that leptin creates long-term satiety. But now if you're really overweight, that doesn't work like that. So the way I usually look at, you know, things like carbohydrates, Stop. Hold on a second. I've got a package.